In 2001, Vonage revolutionized home phone service, making it better with voice over internet. After such an achievement, who would have blamed Vonage if they said, "Enjoy better, people. We'll be by the pool." But the thing about better is, there's always more better. So today, Vonage is not unleashing its ripped abdominals by the pool, but is back to work transforming communications for business by making it better with award-winning cloud-based solutions, an infrastructure that grows as you grow, seamless mobility between all devices so you never miss that important call, even if you're splishy-splashing in the pool that Vonage isn't, because Vonage is too busy making communications better, and all for so much less than you think. So when you're reapplying your SPF 45, Vonage won't be there to rub it in. Because Vonage will be out there, somewhere, doing more better. See how your business can get the better it deserves. Call Vonage at 1-800-5-VONAGE or go to Vonage.com. Vonage, the business of better.
Blog Talk Radio. Now, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale Executive Airport in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, it's Plain Talk Radio, a talk show dedicated to promoting an appreciation and understanding of business aviation, hosted by Stuart Lapayoker. It's Plain Talk Radio.
Welcome to Plain Talk Radio for Tuesday, November 16th, 2010. I'm your host, Stuart Lapayoker, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale, as we do bi-weekly at around the same time. Great show for you today. Joining us is Gary Garofalo of Garofalo Gerlach Hainbeck in Washington, D.C., and Barbara Spohr, a new member of the Board of Directors of the National Aircraft Finance Association and Executive Vice President of SAI Valuations in Sandwich, Illinois. Glad we're doing this around lunchtime. That sounds about right. We'll be talking about developments in the FAA and DOT regulations and aircraft valuation and aircraft finance. Be sure to enter the chat room on your screen or give us a call with your questions or comments using the numbers you see on your screen or our toll-free number, 877-511-1032. Or if you've registered at BTR, you can click to talk or Skype us. We'll have PTR T-shirts for the first 10 callers wanting to ask questions. You can add us to your iTunes from the Blog Talk Radio, Plain Talk Radio page, and follow the show schedule using some widgets on the page that will drop the show onto Outlook or other calendar programs. If you have a new product or service that serves the business aviation community and would like to be interviewed at NBAA or at the next event, drop us a note at airplaneguy@plaintalkradio.com. There's the usual disclaimer you can hear on our archive shows. For good measure, we'll do it again, but in the future, we're going to just refer you back to the disclaimers in the archives. Although the show may touch upon legal, tax, or regulatory issues, nothing contained in the broadcast should be relied upon as legal advice appropriate to your situation, which can only be given by your own legal counsel. The opinions that you hear of our guests represent their personal views and not necessarily those of the organization with which they are affiliated or Plain Talk Radio. Our next show will air on Friday, December 3rd, when we will be joined by Ed Kammer of Hinckley Allen Snyder and Bob Knievel of Bombardier's Flexjet program. We'll talk about the role of different players in an aircraft transaction, and we'll talk with Bob about the fractional aircraft market and related issues. Now to our show, Gary and Barbara, welcome.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for being on the show. Gary, you and I were talking before the show about a couple of developments over the last several weeks and some lingering issues. What have you seen recently in the way of FAA or DOT regulatory developments?
Well, I can start off by giving you a couple of regulatory updates that are going to affect business aviation, both the Part 91 operators and your commercial 135 operators. And I'm looking at this mainly from an FAA regulatory standpoint. And one topic that's of interest, I think, is the FAA's recent re-registration rule. As many of the listeners probably know, in July, the FAA adopted a rule that required an initial re-registration of every single U.S. registered aircraft in accordance with a prescribed timetable, and then you'd have to re-register the airplane every 3 years thereafter. And this rule affects all N-registered aircraft, whether they're used privately, commercially, 91-135. And to get an idea of just how it works, let me illustrate with a personal example. We have a Cessna 172, and the certificate of registration was originally issued on August 18, 1998. And August is the key word there. And according, if I look at the FAA schedule and its rule, our registration is going to expire on June 30, 2012. And if I want to get a guaranteed renewal by the expiration date, by June 30, I have to file a re-registration application between February 1, 2012 and April 30, 2012. So if I hit that window, supposedly the FAA says, you will get your re-registration in time before the original registration expires. Now, they don't guarantee it. I use the term guarantee in quotes. And then once I go through this cancellation and registration, re-registration, then I have to do it again every 3 years. And, if you look at the impact of this kind of a requirement, on me and someone like myself, I'm a private pilot for 91 operation, I mean, it's an annoyance. I mean, maybe it's a big one, but it's just an annoyance. But, on lenders and owners and lessors and lessees, it could be real significant. And, the failure to maintain registration could have impact on your loan documents, your lease documents. Barbara, maybe you could expand on this a little bit more than I.
Yes, I wouldn't be surprised to see some lenders start installing some language into their loan and lease documents because they've already have information and regulations, or I shouldn't say regulations, but requirements per maintenance, and that can be construed as a type of maintenance. But it does include an additional inconvenience for whoever owns the aircraft, be it a flight department, who is in charge of it, or the administrative section, whatever. And goodness, if you let it lapse, now we're dealing with issues of having to repaint the aircraft with a different end number if you can't acquire your old end number, recoding transponders. It just becomes a small logistic nightmare, larger than small.
We actually, we did a couple recently. I think maybe we just did one last week. And what's interesting about it is you can do it online, but in order to do it online, you need the code from the notice that you received from the FAA. And that means that you still need to make sure that the notice gets to the right place. And in order to do that, you need to make sure that the address on your aircraft registration is current and appropriate, because there's a lot of things that go into determining what the address should be on the registration application, which then ends up in the FAA system, not the least of which is where the airplane is going to be based, integrating that into your, sales and use tax planning and other things. So you can do it online. It is relatively easy. There's a form that prints out for you to complete and sign. You still have to mail it in, but you still need to have the code. Without the code, you can't do it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think this could very well be nightmarish, because one of the things that the FAA mentioned in its rulemaking is that you have a, let's say my initial registration expired on June 30, 2012. If I miss the guaranteed window, the guaranteed renewal application window, there's no way to get extensions of time of that expiration date. It simply expires, and there you are without registration, which of course means the airplane is grounded, and as you guys mentioned, you may have some very significant issues under your documents, your loan documents, lease documents, etc.
Oh, I see.
Right.
Okay. So I think we've exhausted the re-registration annoyance. I definitely understand the reasons for it. I just I'm not so sure it's going to accomplish the goal that they're looking for.
It seemed to me to be a little overkill, but be that as it may. Do you want to hit another issue?
Sure.
Another topic?
Yeah.
I think one of the topics, which is probably of always of interest to corporate flight departments and their executives, is personal use of the company aircraft. As you probably know, many executives want to reimburse the company for their personal trips, any personal trips that they take. And I'm looking at this, I'd look at this from an FAA perspective, but, you know, there are IRS issues, like imputing income, loss of deductions for certain types of personal use, and there are SEC implications, reporting requirements, if the use exceeds certain...
No, just you should say hello to him, because he's going to call.
Yeah. So in any event, leaving aside the IRS and the SEC for the moment, from an FAA perspective, as far as I know, there's only one way for an executive to reimburse the company for the executive's personal use of the company aircraft on a Part 91 flight, on a corporate flight department flight, and that's through an FAA-sanctioned timesharing agreement. But the problem in using a timesharing agreement is that the compensation that can flow back to the company is limited to essentially twice the cost of fuel, and it's really not enough to cover the fully allocated cost of the flight. And to complicate matters, there is an FAA opinion that goes back several years. In fact, it goes back to 1993, where as a matter of policy, the FAA said we're basically going to prohibit full cost reimbursement under Part 91, a specific section of 91. So as of the moment, an executive who wants to reimburse the company for the full cost of his personal trip cannot do so under applicable FAA regulations. But there is a development that could alleviate this situation. If there is an executive that wanting to pay the full cost of their personal use, a couple of months ago, the FAA proposed to review and revise to a limited extent its current policy and permit certain executives, high-ranking executives, to reimburse the company for the personal use of the company's aircraft, now up to the fully allocated cost of the transportation. And the FAA published this new policy or proposed policy as a proposal. They put it in the Federal Register and they asked for comments on this reinterpretation of its policy. The executives that would be eligible to take advantage of this effort to allow full cost reimbursement are those high-ranking senior executives that can be recalled from a vacation or other personal use due to any kind of a business-related emergency. So if you're one of these high-ranking executives and you're going on a vacation and something happens back at the ranch, back at the company where it requires your attention, you are that senior to the point where the company can say, you've got to interrupt your vacation and come back and deal with this particular emergency. And the FAA says, in that particular case, the use of the airplane by the company is really part of the company's business, even though the executive initially traveled for personal use. And the mere fact that his journey, his personal use can be interrupted, that means now that he can also reimburse the company up to the fully allocated cost of the flight, and the company can ask for the fully allocated cost of the flight. This is a policy that's been proposed, the proposal's been outstanding now for a couple of months. The comment period has closed. There were really no substantive objections to the FAA's revision or proposed revision to its policy, and now we're just sitting here waiting for an FAA decision. But this may have a real good effect, a salutary effect on those execs that want to tell their shareholders, yes, I use the the company aircraft is available for my personal use, but I must tell you, I reimburse the company up to the full cost of that transportation.
That's
outstanding. I don't know what your listeners may think of that, whether it affects them directly or indirectly.
Well, you know what? We're going to go to a caller with a question.
Ah.
And he's coming from an international line. So let's see if we have our first international caller.
You got it.
Hang on 1 second.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Hi. Welcome to Plane Talk Radio.
Hi. Stuart?
Yes.
This is Oliver Ross. I'm an attorney in a law firm in London.
Hello, Oliver. How are you?
I'm fine. It's the evening here. I guess it's about lunchtime for you. I'm interested in asking a particular question about non-U.S. citizen owner trusts. As you may or may not know, we frequently use non-U.S. citizen owner trusts under Part 47 in the structures that we prepare for the international financing of commercial and corporate aircraft. So both apply. Now, we are very concerned about the uncertainty that has arisen in connection with the FAA's initiatives last May, and would like to have your steer on what it intends to do in the future in that regard.
I think that was probably one of the topics that Gary and Barbara were going to hit on. I can start it off. A few months ago, we had a situation where the FAA completely shut down the use of owner trusts. And after the industry got together and did a lot of explaining and gave a lot of reasons why that was that would not be a good thing for business aviation or commercial aviation or aviation finance. The FAA's general counsel determined to go back to the status quo, and I believe the FAA right now is allowing the former process to continue, although they're studying what if anything they want to do about it in the future. And I think I'm not quite sure. I don't think they've articulated precisely what the concerns were, but I think one of them was that people are using, non-U.S. citizens are using the FAA Civil Aircraft Registry as a registry of convenience. I'm not sure why that matters, since the statute and the regulation actually allow that. Gary, have you heard anything recently?
No, I think yours. That was an accurate summary of what the current status is. I think the only thing I would add to that is the chief counsel seemed to reassure people out there, Oliver, that while the FAA is reviewing this issue, they would take no precipitous action to eliminate or curtail the use of owner trust in the manner in which they're using them now. And I also echo your sentiment, Stuart. One of the rationales they said was we're afraid that U.S. registry may be a flag of convenience. Quite frankly, I never understood that. I would think that we would want to get as many aircraft registered here as we possibly could, which would mean that, it's N registered, you're going to have U.S. licensed repair stations to do the maintenance. There's all kinds of benefits that I see, but deep down in, I think this precipitous action that Stuart mentioned they took a couple of months ago probably had some security basis for it, but frankly, I haven't been able to figure that out.
I think the main focus was on having the beneficial owner of the trust in operational control of the airplane. That was their main focus.
Yeah.
So, at
least that's what they said.
At least that's what they said.
Yeah. Gary, you hit the nail on the head when you were talking about maintenance. It used to be years ago that, from a valuation standpoint, a U.S. registered aircraft would hold its value a little better than aircraft in a third world country registered as such. And again, that has to do with the maintenance. You have to obviously dig down a little deeper regarding the maintenance to see how it's been maintained, where it's maintained, and as per the manufacturer dictates. But that's also an issue in the valuation standpoint.
Yeah. Oliver, are you still there?
Yes, I am. I am.
Boy, your sound is better than mine, I think. let me ask you this. What are you seeing across the pond in the business aviation area? What are some of the hot topics or the things that you're involved in these days?
Well, the market has been slow to come back. We have found a substantial increase in interest on the corporate jet market rather than the private jet. We have been involved in two transactions in which there are six aircraft of particular types in each particular transaction. Now, those are very substantial orders. There has been concern about the situation in the States, not only from the point of view of the non-U.S. citizen owner trusts, but also the triennial aircraft registration issue, which flared up also around about the same time in May or June of this year. So, at the moment, people are contemplating the future. The market hasn't come back, but looks as if it will, but it's going to take a little while, and that's why people are now sort of considering the kind of structures that they're using and the long-term viability of such structures. The question, I guess, is what do you say to a client who wants to employ a U.S. owner trust structure? What do you say to him as to what's going to happen in the future? Now, will the transactions that do go through be grandfathered, or will they not? Will they? I assume that the FAA will act responsibly. They always have done. But how will they manage the changes in the regulations that they may bring in from time to time?
You know, when U.S. Corporate aircraft are going to spend a lot of time in the EU, one of the processes that they would go through is the importation through the UK, paying zero VAT if the aircraft was above a certain weight, 1,000 kilos, I think. And I know that is set to be changed or expire in January under pressure from the EU. Have you heard anything about that recently in terms of whether that's actually going to be pushed out?
It is certainly on the stocks, and it is likely to happen. No one is absolutely certain of the manner in which it's going to happen. The rest of the European countries have for some time governed their VAT regulations with respect to aircraft which are above the 8,000 kilo threshold with reference to the international use of the aircraft. And their idea is, if it's international, you can't put an operator at a disadvantage by imposing more tax than he would have to carry than his other competitors internationally. So that's the rationale, and that makes a great deal of sense. The British have roundly ignored that for some time, and it seems have rather enjoyed doing that. But what's new? That's the Brits in Europe. But there is no doubt that there is very substantial pressure now on the UK to comply. and they have been embarrassed into taking certain steps. Now, as to how these steps will actually pan out, we have yet to see that in detail.
You want to, as we go through some other things, you want to stay with us on the air?
Yep.
Okay. We're going to keep you on your, you'll have an open mic. How about that?
Great. Okay,
chime in. Gary, maybe we've got time for maybe one or two other things, and then we'll talk to Barbara about what's going on with NAFA.
Well, I do have another topic that may be of interest, and Oliver, you may be able to comment on it, and that's the need for safety management systems, SMS. Maybe from the U.S. standpoint, this is primarily directed at the Part 135 operators of business aircraft, but it could spill over to the Part 91 corporate operators, and I'll explain why in a second. SMS is, without getting into all the details, it's a safety management system. It's a comprehensive, process-oriented approach to managing safety throughout an organization. That was a quote from the FAA requirement. And SMS has been an international requirement, as I see it, since 2006, where ICAO established some SMS standards across the board for the ICAO members to implement. In November of this year, the FAA finally got around to proposing SMS as a requirement, but the proposal was limited to Part 121 operators, to the air carriers, with the objective of having a rule in place by 2012, July. But at the same time, and this is where the corporate operators have to pay attention, the FAA put the Part 135 operators on notice that the same 121 requirements could very well be applied to Part 135 operators. Although no formal action was taken in the rulemaking proposal, I think if I'm a 135 operator of business aircraft out there, I would really pay heed to this. But there are also, to me, there are also some implications for even the corporate Part 91 operators. Because as I see it, since SMS is an ICAO requirement, that any other country that has adopted this requirement that requires SMS can now legitimately refuse operating rights for an operator, such as a U.S. corporate operator, that doesn't have an SMS that complies with that country's internal law. And the fact that the FAA has not mandated SMS for Part 91 operators, to me, doesn't stop other countries from imposing SMS requirements on the same operators, the U.S. operators, flying in and out of their country. And I'm told that some ICAO member states have denied entry to 135 operators due to the fact that these operators don't have an approved SMS. And when I say approved by the country into which they would be operating. And reportedly also that Bermuda has now placed the business aviation community, which obviously includes your corporate flight departments, on notice of its requirements, and that if you don't have SMS, you run the risk of being denied entry to Bermuda. Now, fortunately, the Bermudans have identified a system, an SMS system, that's offered by SBAO, which is the International Standard for Business Aviation Operations, that if you comply with the SBAO standard, then you comply with the Bermudan standard. Now, I don't know whether there are other countries in Europe, and maybe, Oliver, you could address that, or Barbara, maybe you're familiar with that, but I did run across the Bermuda situation. But I think this is something I would be concerned about if I'm a 135 operator of business aircraft, and if I'm a Part 91 corporate flight department flying internationally.
Okay. Well, Gary, I want to thank you for that lively update.
Welcome.
And Oliver, thank you for thank you for calling in. We're going to still keep you on the line. We're going to go to Barbara. And for those not familiar with the National Aircraft Finance Association, and by the way, you have to pronounce that F, because when Gary and I were talking about the show, we went into talking about NASA. And suborbital spaceflight. So we came up with actually a great topic for one of our shows. I actually have a there's a client of mine who actually has signed up for that trip. So maybe I can impose upon him to tell us a little bit about what he's doing to prepare. But in any event, maybe you could tell us something about NASA and its role in business aviation and what you've been doing recently.
Well, NASA, some of us are in orbit, I'll tell you. basically, just kind of a quick synopsis. NASA, National Aircraft Finance Association, it's a nonprofit organization. We're geared towards support of lenders, lessors, insurance, and valuation community in the aviation industry. And we try to provide knowledge, education, and information to encourage our activities and keep us as competent and as qualified as possible. I just joined the board this year and kind of getting in trial by fire here. A lot of information thrown at me once, so it's been very interesting, very gratifying too, because it's nice to get to know and meet the rest of the NAFA members.
I know the fee to join NAFA is not that expensive.
It's not expensive at all.
It's not just for lenders and leasing companies. There are many consultants, there are many law firms that are members, including ours. You find it to be a very collegial atmosphere. You get to see a lot of other members at the NBAA and at NAFA's annual cocktail party there, and also the other events during the year.
Absolutely. And don't let the finance and the name throw you. As you mentioned, Stuart, it's important to anybody who has support to that industry and offers support and services. Myself as an appraiser, they actually have a class before the annual meeting, which helps us meet some of our continued ed requirements. And if anybody is interested, please feel free to look at our website, www.nafa.aero. And actually, we have our next annual conference coming up in your neck of the woods, Stuart. It's going to be, I believe, the week of May 3rd of next year.
May 3rd. It's the 40th anniversary. It's May 3rd to the 6th at the Harbor Beach Marriott Resort in Fort Lauderdale.
Yes, very nice facility. We've been there a couple years ago, and actually many of us voted to go back. We enjoyed it so much.
Great. What are you seeing in the market with respect? Because I know you're on the appraisal side of things.
Mm-hmm.
What are you seeing? And I know you do some work for banks, among others. What are you seeing in the market with respect to the pre-owned aircraft that you looked at, a year ago? And any thoughts you might have for the upcoming year?
Well, we've seen a severe declination in values. That's no mystery. The only way we're going to get out of this is basically the used inventory, try to decrease that. Some of this used inventory that's out there right now is older aircraft that is not desirable. It's towards the end of their normal useful life, and there's not even a tertiary market for these aircraft to go to now. It used to be third world countries. Well, now the third world countries are becoming our emerging markets, so we have to be careful, and they're actually being more savvy in the purchase of the aircraft. To sell your aircraft, if you're looking at the used aircraft market and you have an aircraft you need to sell, what is out there, you need to see what brings your aircraft to the top of the list, the cream of the crop. And those are the aircraft that are still moving, especially in the heavy arena, the large
Is that why we saw, the G4s, the G5s, the larger aircraft? Because I saw them move first.
There's Starting to move. The G4 market is still very soft. G5, there's some movement there. In fact, I had a client looking for a G5 that couldn't find one to meet his needs. Again, if you're looking at the used market, the cream of the crop is going to go first. And by that, I mean the newer aircraft, the more technologically advanced aircraft, more efficient aircraft, and that's what's really going to bring you to the top.
And, NAFA also has a scholarship that they give out, and
yes,
called the Corporate Aviation Business Scholarship, and that benefits students looking for a degree relating to corporate aviation, and especially within corporate aircraft finance. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that. I know you're on the scholarship committee.
I am on the scholarship committee. I just joined, and actually this is a slow time of the year for us. We are actually in the process of trying to find qualified schools. We have a couple on our list already, but we're always looking for qualified schools. And by that qualification, we're looking for somebody who offers aviation-related degrees, be it business, maintenance, flight, whatever it may be. So it's another way to promote the industry, which NAFA stands for, and basically get some new blood in our organization and some fresh ideas.
Great. Well, thanks for joining us. Looks like we've got a caller from Texas, but without their hand up, and I'm not going to spook them by calling on them. So, but thank you very much for calling. Want to do a little bit of a shout out to Mary Ann. She knows who she is. She had a tough week this week or last week. I want to thank you for tuning in to this broadcast of Plain Talk Radio. We hope you found it enjoyable. The show can be accessed at a later date or shared from the webpage. I want to thank my guests, Gary Garofalo and Barbara Spohr, for appearing on the show. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did.
Thank you, Stuart. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. Thank you so much, gentlemen.
We look forward to our next show on December 3rd. Invite you to listen in. If you have a new product or service that serves the business aviation community, drop us a note at airplaneguy@plaintalkradio.com. Remember to contribute to the Corporate Angel Network and participate in the NBAA, NAFA, and your local business aviation association. This is Stuart Lapioca, the host of Plain Talk Radio, November 16, 2010, signing off for now. Just a reminder, give generously to Corporate Angel Network, NBAA, and your local business aviation association. Fly safely. Don't take advice on the golf course about business aviation, for goodness sakes. And always close with a fizzle. Good afternoon, everyone. Have a safe and happy Thanksgiving, and we'll see you on December 3rd.
Same to you.
Good night, Stuart.
Bye.
Good night, Stuart. Good day. See you, Barbara.